Well, I hope I did spark your attention a little bit with the title. So that's a, Beverly asked me, said, "Who's Timmy?" I said, "Not telling." I met 4-year-old Timmy a few weeks ago by accident. Been doing some substitute teaching, and so I was assigned to a job for the day. And the way things are now with the virus, when you're a substitute teacher in this day and time, it's a very flexible, it's always a flexible, you have to be flexible in that job, but it's ultimate flexibility now. So you may get a phone call in the morning and you may be supposed to be at this spot, and you get to the school and they say, "Oh, wait a minute, so-and-so called, they can't come in today. We need you to go over here and fill in." And then they may come in the middle of that and say, "Hey, this happened, this is more important, we need you over here." So I got a phone call, 7 o'clock in the morning. "Need you to go to this elementary school. You're going to be filling in for computer lab today." I thought, and this was just a couple days before Christmas, so I'd always been, already been battling that deal, trying to dodge the bullets of Christmas and having to explain, "Well, I can't read, I'm not going to read, you know, Santa Claus and the elves to these kids," you know. It was one of the requests I had one day, and so it always kept me on my toes when I get called in, knowing that I was going to have to be involved in that and trying to figure out my ways around it. But anyway, so I got a call, computer labs. Computer labs, easy. You go in, you sit down, kids come in, you know, every hour or 45 minutes, and you just, they do their computer games or math games or whatever, and you just basically watch over, make sure somebody doesn't stab somebody, or, you know, nobody's doing anything illegal. So when I got there, it turned out, no, you're not, that's not the job that this lady has. She's, "Here's your schedule for the day." And here's my hand, my schedule, and it's, you go over here for 30 minutes and over here for 45 minutes, and then you're back here, and then you got these kids over in this room, and you got these kids over in that room. So I'm trying to figure out my day. And then you got lunch duty. So I was on lunch duty. I made it through the first half of the day, and I'm on lunch duty, and here comes the principal, and he says, "We need you to go to pre-K and spend the rest of the day. The teacher that's in there is quarantined, and we're having to send her home." So I went in to the 4-year-old classroom and had a chance, you know, of course, if you've ever dealt with one 4-year-old, that's fun and interesting. But how about 20 4-year-olds? Or I think it was actually 18 that we had that day. That's a very interesting time. And 4-year-olds are very excited. They want to show you things and they want to tell you things. And when you're new and you walk in, you're a hero automatically because it's different. Something different is going on. And we want to tell you about things and what we're doing. And they want to explain. And there's an excitement in a 4-year-old. So I met little Timmy, arguably the cutest kid in the class. Little small Timmy. And if you ever, back in the old days, ever, I couldn't help but make the correlation here. If you ever saw the old Charles Dickens movie of The Christmas Story, and there was Tiny Tim, okay? Well, he had a bad leg, and, you know, we just kind of felt sorry for Tiny Tim. You know, he was that character. Well, this little Tim wasn't exactly the same, but they actually called him. One of the girls had told me she called him Tiny Tim one day, and he didn't like that. Called him Tiny Tim because he was smaller than everyone else, and again, arguably cuter than everybody else in the class. But he had one problem, the marker system. The marker system was Timmy's enemy, because Timmy has a hard time sitting still, staying quiet, following directions and doing anything that he's told to do. And I'm afraid his cuteness might sometimes play into that a little bit and probably lets him get away with things that maybe other kids wouldn't. And he has a way of just kind of staring at you with these cute little eyes and then going right back to doing exactly what he wants to do. The marker system is a good system. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, but basically it's, you take a clothespin or a whatever, some kind of decoration. Maybe it's an apple, maybe it's a fish, maybe it's an animal, something. And there's a chart. And on that chart is, everybody starts in the middle. And if you do good things, you get to move your marker up. And if you get moved all the way up to the top, you get a prize at the end of the day. Or maybe if you're in the upper echelon, you get a prize. But if you start moving your marker down, and there's maybe the middle, and then maybe three or four spots down here, and all the way at the bottom is the bad, and all the way at the top is the good. And so you can end up in a day's time anywhere in that range of great to horrible. And horrible might be we call your parents and we have to have some kind of meeting or something like that. It's a good system of rewards and consequences, and it makes sense. And in dealing with a classroom full of four-year-olds, it kind of gets everyone on the same page. But Timmy got his marker moved a lot. A lot. And it was obvious. And the way he got his marker moved was always in the wrong direction, not the right direction, it seemed. Matthew 18 and verse 5, if you'll turn there to begin, at verse 3. Actually, let's start in verse 1. If you think that this sermon doesn't apply to you, hopefully this will clear that up. If we think, we're talking about child rearing and we're talking about kids, but we're all grown up children. And being able to understand the mind of a child gives us a whole lot of insight into our own minds and our own beings. Verse 1. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus saying, "Who then is greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Now that sounds a little childish in itself, doesn't it? When who's the greatest? Who's the most wonderful here? Jesus called a little child to him and set him in the midst and said, "Assuredly I say to you, unless you are converted and become as little children, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself as this little child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever receives one little child like this in my name receives me." So we're supposed to become as little children, but without understanding how little children think, can we really become as little children? Have we grown up to the point that we've forgotten what it's like to be a child? And I wonder how many people actually stop and think, how does this child think? What are they thinking about? What is it that's driving them? Proverbs 6, verse 22, and you've already heard that scripture mentioned here today because did I get that wrong? What was that scripture that only 22:6, that's backwards. Okay, sorry. Proverbs 22 and verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Just to cover that scripture, just to kind of stick in there. We've heard that a million times, very common place that we go to. And we'll also go to Deuteronomy 6. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 6 says, "And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart." So we're told they shall be in our heart. We shall internalize these and make them a part of us. And then after this, "you shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes." So we have to internalize the truth and the commandments and the way that we walk. And then our responsibility is to turn around and to teach that to the people who we're responsible for. Comedian Paul Reiser says, "They're not that sharp people. They're not the sharpest people, babies. So you must be everything to them." And if you think about that, it's so true. Children don't really get it. You know, they just don't get it. They just fly by whatever goes on. If they see something sparkly, they go for it. If they see something, they really don't have any understanding. I'll give you a few points here. I'm not usually good at following points, and sometimes I miss them. So we're going to go with number one. Hopefully I won't go from one to three or something like that. Everything is a learning opportunity / teaching opportunity. Something to remember. Everything, and it's that way with children, and it's that way with us. Everything we do is a learning opportunity and a teaching opportunity. Now, I think this is key, and if we want to talk about this from the point of view of being a parent, but again, I want to make sure that we are thinking about how children think, that we're getting a little bit of understanding about what they think and what they do. Children need to be engaged. They need to be excited. They have lots of energy. It's probably why God made us to have parents in our younger years, and as unfortunately we see so many grandparents and even great-grandparents raising kids in this day and time, and you see those parents, those grandparents, and they look tired. They look very tired, as they are tired, because I have a cousin who's raising her 5-year-old granddaughter, and she's had some difficulties anyway with some other things, but she's just so tired, and she's really struggling with that. And I was talking to her the other day, and one of the conversations, I said, yeah, it takes a lot of energy just to keep a 4-year-old engaged. You know, you have to be on your toes. You have to be thinking 2 steps ahead, because you may think that what you're about to give this kid is going to keep, this is going to be great. It's going to keep them busy, and I don't want to do that. Well, wait a minute. What do you mean? You better be ready for that. You better have 2 more steps ahead, because they want to be excited. They want to be excited. And in knowing that and understanding that, if we're talking about really raising kids, just as a tip, always try to make everything, and then God tells us in this scripture, train up a child in the way. Teach them when they rise up, when they lie down. So if you're constantly thinking of life as a learning opportunity and understanding, knowing that these children are just soaking up all kinds of things from moment to moment, all throughout the day. And you know, when they go and they lay down, then they just fall over and go just pass out and go to sleep. And then they wake back up and they're right back on full speed again. So it's so important that we realize and we remember and we know that their life is full of learning. And our life should be full of learning. We should be looking at everything that we see in our lives as an opportunity to learn, as a way to understand more about God's kingdom, more about what's going on around us, more about human beings and human nature, and having to how to understand each other, and how to be able to help and teach each other. Now within that, fun is part of that, isn't it? Enjoyment is part of that. And if you go and you take a group of 4-year-olds and you start trying to read Shakespeare to them, they don't care about Shakespeare. They don't care about... So you've got to figure out what it is they actually want and need at the same time. And the want and the need has to kind of cross, because what do they want? Well, they want things that are not good for them. And just as we do as grown-ups, we often are tempted and we want the things that are not good for us. So as we're teaching self-discipline. We're teaching things like long-suffering. And we're teaching those things that are patience, which are all spiritual principles that we're teaching to young kids. Which brings us to point number two. So point number one is everything is a teaching opportunity. And that's, again, for 4-year-olds or 84-year-olds. And if we keep our minds that way, we stay resilient. We stay ready to face and focus on the next day and to be excited because there's opportunities to see new things and learn new things. The point number two, learn patience. Learn patience. We have to expect imperfection in ourselves and in them. Sometimes we set our own goals for ourselves too high. And sometimes we set expectations for young children too high. Now, I think just as often we set expectations for ourselves too low, and we set expectations for young children too low. Because many people don't understand what a child is capable of. And they also don't understand what a human being is capable of. The level of love that we are capable of having with God's help, with God's Spirit, is amazing. We can learn to let things go. We're instructed all through the New Testament about how to treat each other and how to live and how to forgive. And there's so many things that we can do. And we sometimes lower our limits and we say, "Ah, I just can't do that." Or people tend to look at children and they limit them and say, "Oh, they're not capable of doing that." It's amazing what children are capable of understanding and what children are capable of doing and what they will enjoy doing. When you take every moment as a teaching opportunity, you begin to see that if you will begin on a small level, you can always add to and grow it throughout their lives. We've got to learn to slow down. You know, how many people got caught off guard? You know, they probably should have slowed down before the baby. Instead, they hit high speed on the relationship, and there came the baby, and they didn't know how to deal with that. But when a child comes, it's time to slow down. Paul Reiser again says, "Having a baby dragged me, kicking and screaming, from the world of self-absorption." Did anybody feel like that when you first had a kid, that you didn't really, maybe everybody didn't. I don't think I felt that way. I think I kind of knew what I was expecting to kind of get into a little bit, but I know a lot of times it's a very life-changing event for someone when they have a child. They didn't realize it was going to take all that time. It's kind of like, you know, you go get a puppy, and then you realize, "Oh, wait, the puppy messes in the floor? What do you mean? Oh, you mean, well, I'm going somewhere. You know, I got to do something with this animal. I can't just, you know." And so that's why you see a lot of dogs chained to trees and stuck in a pen, and they never get taken care of because they didn't consider it. But a baby, guess what? You can't chain them to a tree. You can't put them in a pen. So you got to do something with them. So you just have to drag them along or take them with you. And so people find themselves, as the old saying goes, behind the eight ball. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to get themselves out of this situation. So the kid just ends up getting dragged through life, bouncing off of everything because the parent's not going to change their way and slow down. And this world of self-absorption has to become a way of love. You're forced to stop and at least take care of that child somewhat. If we're ready for that, and if we accept that responsibility, and we've planned parenthood, and we've really paid attention, we realize that the responsibility that we've been given is a God-given responsibility then, that once we bring that child into life, we have to then be responsible for their every need, their every thought, their every mistake, that what we're doing is we're having to correct that as they go along, whatever it is. Whatever it is. And we have to know our limitations. Colossians 3. Verse 21 tells us, fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. You know, I think that's a very important scripture in the fact that we see a lot of times parents who become discouraged and impatient and they lose their cool. Instead of really understanding and knowing their limitations that and accepting that responsibility. And I think that's probably the first step is to really entirely accept the responsibility. It's no more self. You know, self doesn't come first anymore. When you're a parent, your child's needs, I don't mean their wants, and that's where I think it gets confusing sometimes, that people, they get a child's wants and their needs mixed up because the child wants to eat ice cream every day, all day long, and they don't want to eat anything else. How many children have you ever known that ask for all the vegetables and all the good things for them? They don't do it. And, you know, years ago, especially when we were growing up, you would hear, eat your vegetables. You know, why did that have to be said? Because a kid doesn't want it. We're made with the enjoyment for sweets. I mean, everyone loves a good piece of cake or a no-bake cookie or a brownie or, you know, and those things taste good. And they feel good going down. Oh, boy, that just... But too much of that doesn't work well. And you know, every child that I've ever... We've raised four. And every child that I've ever seen in my life goes through a stage where they don't really... They just... I don't know if their taste buds change a little or there's a period of time where they go, ugh, no, I don't like that. I don't like that. But how many of you... when you're growing up, had to eat whatever was on the table. Okay? You know, there's a psychology in that. It's believe it or not, there's a common sense in that. Not only, you know, and people, I think, look back, and especially now we see the millennials in this age, they look back, they see it's senseless. Why would I make my kid eat everything on their plate? That's just cruel. Well, if you really look deep into it and understand the child's mind, the child is wanting just what tastes good, not what's good for them long term. And they're not thinking about their health. They're not thinking about what makes them energetic and keeps their weight under control and keeps them healthy and vibrant. They're thinking about, what do I want right now? What tastes good? And they don't realize that their taste buds are going to change and that they're going to grow. And without making your children eat what's on the table, you know, they never learn to enjoy all of those things. They look at a carrot and they go, ugh. My niece was over this week. She eats Nutella and peanut butter and cereal, and I believe that's about it. I mean, literally, probably on one hand, I could count the things that the kid will eat. She won't eat anything else. And I always try to get her, oh, here, try this. So I got her to eat a snap pea. She says, eh, that's not too bad. But she has already decided now what she likes. And it's going to be a battle or it's just going to be let go, one or the other, which would probably just be let go. My point is not to criticize anyone else's parenting, but to understand that when you're trying to, something as simple as trying to teach a kid what to eat is a blessing to them down the road. That they, it opens worlds for them. Food is great. And I know that many of us, we enjoy all different kinds of food. You know, if you think about the good in that is when you're older and you go somewhere and someone's prepared a meal. Well, I don't like that. All I like is peanut butter. You know, well, Dave's made a nice steak dinner. No, I don't want to go to Dave's because I don't like steak. And, you know, it really does turn into those types of things that it keeps people from getting together. It keeps people from enjoying dinners out and things like that. And, yeah, that's a far stretch. But just the gift, it's actually a gift to give your kids to teach them to like different things that are good for them and to enjoy the things that God has made for us to eat and the things that we need. And then again, you know, great for their health and other things as well. But even spiritually speaking, it becomes a blessing, and it becomes I'm less picky. I'm more flexible. I'm not so rigid on everything and every decision that I make. Psalms 127. Beverly, would you care to bring some water here in my phone? I can keep the time up.
Okay.
Ran off and forgot my water. I'm going to keep up the time. So. Psalm 127 says, in verse 3, he says, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward." You know how many people really look at their children as being a reward? I mean, it's really sad when you see how many people really don't want the children that they have. And I don't mean the extreme cases even. I'm not talking about the people who are drug addicts and things like that. And those are common enough. But I mean to really look at your children as a reward. I mean a great and fabulous thing. I worked with a fellow several years ago. He was getting ready to go on vacation. He had the awfulest look on his face. He was getting ready to go on vacation. And somehow it came up, what's the problem? I'm going to have to spend a whole week with my wife and my kids. Something's wrong. He doesn't believe Psalms 127 and verse 3. And he's a pretty easy to get along with kind of guy. Always a guy that I enjoyed being around. But he obviously didn't have the understanding and the control of his kids to know and to be able to have the understanding that it was a blessing, it was a joy to be able to see it as a reward to be a parent. Point number 3. We have to learn to love and to give. Point 2 was we learn patience. And point 3, we learn to love and to give. Matthew 19. Matthew 19 and verse 13. And you know, we go through life and we make ourselves, if we want to talk about us being like little kids, you know, sometimes we get our marker moved up a little or down a little, and we realize that God is way more patient than sometimes we might understand, and depending on what kind of family we're brought up in, gives us sometimes a false look at God as being either too lenient or as being too harsh and too strict. And, you know, I think if we think about that chart and realize that there's a few different levels in there, you know, that we can get to. Sometimes we're really being rewarded And sometimes our choices are sending us down the other direction. Maybe we got up here and then we had to move our marker back down a little bit. And I think it's very interesting in this time that we live in that we look back on the past and we've almost become to the point where we have to be grown-ups, because so much of the government of the church has disappeared. So much of having strong leadership and people being together, and we've had to stand on our own two feet. We may have bounced from one group to another group and then back over here. And so, you know, we find it hard to even put ourselves underneath a certain group or a certain government. And we realize that things are not perfect. So what do? We end up having to make more grown-up decisions, spiritually speaking, ourselves. Matthew 19, verse 13. Again, Christ here, "Then little children were brought to him, that he might put his hands on them and pray. But the disciples rebuked them. But Jesus said, Let the little children come to me, and do not forbid them, for such is the kingdom of heaven. And he laid his hands on them and departed from there." There was an old song, I'm sure you guys remember this. Jesus loves the little children, mm-hmm. All the little children of the world. You know, Christ loves these little children, and this is talking, you know, for here about really children. Would Christ have trouble disciplining and directing a class full of 4-year-olds? Can you think about that for a moment? Would he lose his mind and be pulling his hair out? Or would he understand what it is that they need? We tend to give up too quick. And we have to learn to love and to give. But what happens with little kids? We lose our patience. And we tend to remove ourselves from the situation instead of having that stick-to-itiveness to stay and to go ahead and solve the problem. You know, once that problem is solved and that child realizes and comes to the understanding of how things are going to be and the boundaries are set up and the walls are established, that's when those children become a reward. Ephesians 5 and verse 2. Ephesians 5 verse 2 says, "And walk in love as Christ also has loved us and given himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling aroma." Christ loved us first. And so if we're not willing to lay down our own desires, our TV watching, our, you know, beer drinking, or whatever it is that people get, you know, football games or whatever, those things become more important and are more important than being a parent. I don't think beer drinking is one of those too important with anybody in this room, but as we look out into the world, we see that whatever those desires, partying, going out with my friends, or you know, I like to play golf, or I like, you know, whatever. And so the children get ignored. It's not that there's not ever room to play golf, but you know what? What keeps the dad from taking the son with him to play golf and teaching him how to play golf, or the daughter? From making it a family outing, teaching the kids how to do those things. Nothing wrong with playing golf. But our priorities have to be there. And learning to love and to give and to put our families first makes all the difference in the world. Just as we have to learn to put God first and put Christ first in our lives. And not that we can't enjoy other things, but we have to, you know, the old saying, put first things first. What does it mean to put first things first? Well, it's a Sabbath. That's the first thing on the list today. That's what I do today. You know, we know that every seventh day where we're going to be and that God has given us rules to follow. comedian Ray Romano said, "Everyone should have kids. They are the greatest joy in the world. But they are terrorists. You'll realize this as soon as they're born and they start using sleep deprivation to break you." Again, that's in the very beginning. We have to learn to start giving. Maybe a lesson in that, as a child's born, and you know, I guess I can't stay up so late, you know, playing, you know, ping pong or whatever it is I enjoy doing, or watching TV, or you know, because I'm probably going to be having to get up in the middle of the night and get a crying baby or change a diaper or whatever that happens to be. So learning that, starting to give immediately, and as Christ loved us first, we're told, we have to become parents who love first and take selfishness and put it aside and work, focus on love and giving. The next point, and maybe the last point, and maybe the most important, but not the most important. There must be government in your family. Bill Cosby had a funny way of putting things sometimes. Bill Cosby said, "No matter how calmly you try to referee, parenting will eventually produce bizarre behavior. And I'm not talking about the kids. Their behavior is always normal." Proverbs 1 and verse 7. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." Apply that to your family, and you could change that and say, the fear of your father and mother, the respect, the reverence, is the beginning of knowledge. Have you ever tried to teach a child who can't sit still? Now, I said can't sit still? That's a lie. I've never met a kid who couldn't sit still. That may be a challenge to sit still. It may be a challenge for us to do certain things. We're not friends with our child first, but we are friends and become friends most importantly. You see, as this government is established, it opens doors. It opens doors to create. You know, God is building a what? A family? Does God want us to be His friends? Of course. And God expects us to change and to grow. And He's not going to tolerate us being disobedient and going in the wrong direction. However, He does want us to have variety and be different and have different types of personalities that all fit within His rules. So we're not friends first, but we are friends most importantly. Do you realize that God gave us and required of us to enforce this in our families? I think that many people have forgotten that and don't realize and feel like they're out of control. Many parents don't realize that they can stop any behavior that they choose to stop. You know, when a child is only this tall, you can move them around. You know, they can do whatever you need to do. And we're given plenty of different directions on, you know, as far as discipline and things like that. But it's, and I'm not making light of it, it's very hard and it's very difficult for people to really understand that. And I mean, even in good families, to really understand that you get the final say-so. You win. I was some years ago, I was challenged. Do you always have to win with your kids? Yes. Because if I don't win, who wins? They do. Now, I can choose to back down or to change if I'm wrong, but that's my decision. It's not going to be forced on me. Dave Ramsey says, at my house, the inmates don't run the asylum. And I would say the same thing. Now, that doesn't mean that everything has to be miserable, because once we realize that the laws and the rules are set up, you see, once we start walking in the commandments and following God's laws, that's when the rewards start. That's when the real fun begins. Mr. Jones mentioned, you know, the guy that says, oh, he knows how to have a good time. He says, God knows how to have a good time better than anybody. Yes, but not if you're walking outside of God's laws. He warns us, you better get back in there. So as a parent, set up your laws in your house and enforce them. Let those boundaries be solid. And even within that, you can have that warning system a little, but how many times do you see that ever followed to the end? Most of the time you get somebody gets yelled at, and then whatever mistake or problem that they're doing happens again, and it happens 5 or 6 times, and nobody says anything about it because they're too busy watching TV. And then they get fed up with it, and then they go yell again, and there's no consistency. So that child never really learns, no, I mean this. Little Timmy was a victim of that. He got the cute treatment, I think, a lot. I'm sure he got in trouble every day. And I'm sure Timmy's little marker got moved down a whole lot. I was only with Timmy for a half a day. You know, it's our fault. Everything our kids do is our fault. Oh no, that's awful to say that. It is. Now, I'll say this. Sometimes we may just it's accidental fault. We missed something, but it's our fault somehow, some way, because we are the ones that have to. We were responsible. We were given that responsibility. Now, again, find anyone who's done it right. And you know, we all raise our hand. No, that's, you know, we see those things happen. But as we look back, what did we miss somewhere, or what happened? You know, we sometimes feel like we get dropped in the middle of that movie, like Mr. Armstrong talked about, 3/4 of the way through, because again, going back to the beginning, we didn't slow down. Boom, the kid came. Boom, life happened. Boom, this happened. That happened. That something blew up somewhere, and so many times it's on the other side when you're 45 or you're 50 or 55, and you look back and you go, what a roller coaster that was. But you know, if we could have had the support and the help and reached out and had been able to work together at that time and to find someone who'd been through it and was doing it right, somebody maybe who was already 55, and say, hey, wait a minute, I got this problem over here. Can you give me any advice or help on this? You see, Satan's done a good job at splitting us all. And so the older women are not able to go help the younger women, and the older men are not, because there are none. How many times have you found yourself alone in a situation you didn't even know who to ask? And so you just did the best you could, and it was stupid. Whatever you did was stupid. You didn't realize that you were making, but you did the best you could. And maybe the best you could was based on what your dad or your mom did that was stupid, because they didn't know any better. And maybe what they did was based on, and you see how that happens. But it's our job to correct those things, to stop, to turn things around. The sins of the fathers visit on the third and fourth generations. But you know what? It's our job to stop that. It's our job to correct that, to stop those sins. That's what we're doing. That's why we're changing. That's why we're learning. And sometimes if we've gotten past the age of parenthood, or we've got past, we go, well, I don't have to worry about that anymore. That's over with. I'm glad that's behind me. But we need to know where we mess up, what things we do wrong, so that we can in turn be that, have that ability to turn around and teach when someone comes to us and says, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to handle this. I can't deal with it. He's 4 years old. He's running all over. How do I deal with this 4-year-old child? And we look at him and say, well, it's your fault. Let me show you what you're doing. You're allowing this to happen. We know that when we see it in someone else. We see it's easy to look at someone else and see how they might be out of place in allowing a child to go crazy. I've seen many times working at Walmart, would see a kid come in a buggy, they're screaming for something. Mom says, no, you're not getting that. And they scream and they scream. And then you see them 10 minutes later, and whatever it was they were screaming for, they have it in their hand. You see, the child won. The child will wear you down because they want things. They know what they want. They're smart. And they are terrorists. A little tiny baby will cry to get you to come and check on them, to get you to hold them. How many babies have you ever seen spoiled to mom holding them? That early. I remember the first spanking that I ever gave Dane. It was just a little smack on the hand, but he crawled across the floor. He was about 6 months old. There was something over there. I don't remember what it was. And I looked at him. I said, don't you touch that. He turned around. He looked at me and he went, he knew. And so I went over and, swatted his hand, and he cried. But he learned. And it's important that our kids and the grandkids know what no means, and that they know and understand what we are willing to allow. And really, if you don't stop it, you're allowing it. If you're in charge, okay, and you don't stop something, then you're allowing it. Well, what if I didn't know about it? Well, why didn't you know about it? I had a neighbor was telling me the other day that her son, another neighbor was telling me about another kid. This boy had been out running around with a 17-year-old, and she didn't know where he was at. She came by my mom's looking for him, said, well, we thought he might be over here. Well, the boy's 12. He's running around with a 17-year-old. Why is he there? Why is he there? That's allowed. Now, maybe it's okay. Maybe you want to allow that. Maybe that's fine. Maybe she feels good about her decision. But to say, I didn't know where someone was, or I didn't, we have to realize that is the responsibility that we are given. And we have to have that same responsibility now on ourselves, that we have to guide and direct ourselves, because God does give us free will, and our children do have free will, but we are given a jurisdiction over them. Exodus 20. And verse 12, the commandments. Do you think this commandment was written to the children, or is this commandment written to the parents? Honor your father and mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. Who's going to enforce that? A 2-year-old? We can read that to them and say, hey, look here, this is what God says. But whose job is it to enforce it? It's got to be ours, right? We have to enforce honor and respect. We have to enforce that in our houses and in our homes. If we back up to verse 8, we see another key. Remember the Sabbath, keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God, in it you shall do no work. you nor your son. So who's given the direction again to enforce the commandments? You nor your son nor your daughter. We are given this as admonition to us. You have to enforce God's laws. They are under our jurisdiction. I won't turn there, but Proverbs 29:17, Proverbs 22:15. 29:17 talks about discipline. 22:15 talks about foolishness. And Hebrews 12 and verse 11, I'm going to turn there real quick. And I know that, you know, everyone that I know, myself included, have raised children, and things have happened, gone wrong. We've seen disasters happen. We've seen kids make bad decisions. And I'm not saying, by any stretch of imagination, that we can control everything bad or that we're a bad parent if something slips through or happens. We are human. However, on the other side, there's, I think, become in this world this thing that people look at their kids and they say, I can't do anything about it. That's wrong. We can do anything about anything if we know what to do about it. Sometimes we may not know what to do about it. And even as our children grow and get older and they're gone, if we see that we maybe missed something, is it ever too late to go back and say, you know, I messed up on this. I want to apologize to you for this, you know, whatever it happens to be. And I think so many times when we understand that the mistakes that we made may have affected our kids' lives, that if we go back and we make those right, it clears up what should have been and opens the door to what might have been and gives that child an opportunity to see what things can change. One of the last words that my dad ever said to me was, I wish I'd been a better dad to you. He was in the hospital. He died just a few days later. And I've been so thankful for that, because anytime I look back and go, oh, my dad really messed up. Why'd he do that? You know, he messed up. It's covered. You see, just the fact of the apology, and I don't have the opportunity to go back and have that discussion and say, your dad, you know, one time you told me that. I don't really understand that. Or why did you do this? Or why were you doing that? You see, it's covered because the apology's already made. And if there's some question I've got, I'll reconcile that down the road. But while our kids are still alive, and I've got this work to do myself, we've got two kids that are 20 that don't live with us. And when we look back on things and we say, you know, this probably went wrong here, and this might have went wrong here. And so somewhere in there we get a chance, maybe it's when they have to come ask us about something that we get a chance to kind of correct that. But as we learn how to correct things, we get a chance to go back and kind of repair little pieces of that, which gives them an opportunity . You know, the order in our homes must be established and respected first, going back to the very beginning. And again, a lot of parents caught themselves 10, 15 years down the road before they ever even knew. They never even had any idea that how they were taught to parent wasn't exactly the best way. And then it's a process to get ourselves out of that and to become better parents. And so no matter where you are or if you're teaching someone else, it's not an overnight success. But if the order gets established, that seems to be the very first thing that God says. The fear of Him is the beginning of knowledge. And then we see honor your father and mother being one of the commandments. So if we get that established, then it starts to become our choice what we allow. And if we understand that part and get that first piece in place in our families to understand, I am in charge. I am responsible. If it sinks, if it floats, it's on me because I'm driving the boat. So I have to do the best that I can with it. Now, I'm not talking in this entirely about, you know, there's so many split families. There's so many that just brings in a whole nother. And in those situations, I would encourage you, reach out to get some help from a trained professional person, because those things get very, very, very tricky. And when it's all scattered everywhere and you've got people pulling at different sides, and, you know, those things that can be very, very, very tricky. But even in them, there are some good things that we can do to move forward and to help. But remember, in your families, you win. When grandkids come to visit, don't spoil them. Everybody thinks that's a good thing. You know what? That's the worst thing to do, to spoil them. You win. Now, if that's established, now I can give you whatever I want to, but you have to know that I'm dad, or I'm grandpa, or I win. What I say goes. Now, I don't have to say anything, but I have to make sure that I'm choosing and know that I am choosing not to say anything, and I am allowing it, and I'm purposely allowing it. Because again, if you don't say anything and you see it go on and you're in charge, then you're allowing it. Statements like, I can't do anything with him. My kids are awful. You ever hear anybody say these things? My kids are awful. They don't listen to a thing I say. Heard that said a lot of times. Parenting in this day and age is difficult, but it's still doable. Because once we get those things set up and get the establish the rulership and the leadership, and if we're doing it right, and we're doing it with all those first three points of love and patience and caring, then it all works out. Dr. Meg Meeker says, more important than succeeding at work is succeeding with your family. And she also has a quote that says, don't let emotions win, let truth win. How many times have you parented with emotion? Ugh, I always make a big mistake on that. And I always have to go back and say, ugh, you know. But if we're learning, we can repair those things. And you know, parenting's not usually a case by case. If you do this one little thing wrong, everything explodes. It's just kind of things get on a path and they go down the wrong direction. But just like repentance, we can correct things in our families. We can correct problems if we know what to do. And we don't need to allow Satan to divide us to the point that we can't discuss things as parents and try to find answers. And realize that if there's a problem, it's a problem. It really needs to be fixed, and there is a solution. We don't need to give up hope that there's a solution. Timmy gave me some hope. I spent only 4 hours with Timmy. But by simply applying what God says to do, being firm and fair and consistent, Timmy went from challenging everything that I said to being my best friend and my shadow in a period of 4 hours. And it took some time. And I watched one of the teacher's assistants was in there with me and how she dealt with Timmy. And she would tell him, Timmy, you stop that. And then Timmy would do it 16 more times. And then she would say, Timmy, you stop that. And Timmy would do it 43 more times. And then she would say, Timmy, stop that. I made it a point because Timmy got on my nerves. Okay, I'll tell you the truth. I was actually sitting beside Timmy. He had his little mat on the floor, supposed to be nap time. And for about 45 minutes, we battled. But he didn't know who he was battling with. He didn't know that I knew I was going to win, because he always wins. He's cute. He's consistent. And he is persistent. But Timmy laid there, and I was sitting talking to the other teacher that was in the room at the time, and so Timmy's up. Timmy got to lay down. And I made it a point that I'm going to show Timmy how that he has to do what he's supposed to do. Then he puts his foot on me. Timmy, would you like it if I put my foot on you? Put your foot down. You can't have your foot up here. Yeah. He puts his foot on you again. Well, guess what? If you're home, you might get a switch, and you can't do that. You don't swat a four-year-old in a pre-K classroom that you met 30 minutes ago. But through time, and the marker popped into my head, I thought, maybe this marker really matters to Timmy. And so I told him, I'm going to move your marker. You know what? He didn't believe me, because he probably gets threatened a lot. And I found out in this conversation that Timmy's adopted. Little Timmy, no telling what kind of life he's had and what kind of rules and regulations he's actually had to live by. And he probably gets a little pity and probably a little guilt. And if you parent with guilt, you're in trouble. And if you parent and accept too much cuteness, you're in trouble. So I continued to battle with Timmy. And I said, I'm going to move your marker. And Timmy probably in his mind said, nah, 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 boo, boo, you're not moving my marker. So I did. And he looked like he had been stunned. But that wasn't enough. So I continued to tell him and warn him again. And after a few more things that he was doing, he would change and he would lay on this end. And then I would walk around the corner and he'd stand up. And so I moved his marker the second time. I don't guess Timmy had ever had his marker moved two times back to back that he really realized, I see where I'm headed. You know, there were only two more spaces, and that was going to be down at the very bottom. And he, because I didn't let anything go, I corrected it every time, and I talked to him every time I saw it. Timmy realized, this guy means business. I can't push this guy around. And you know what he did? He went to sleep. And he woke up my best friend. And I went over and I said, you ready to get up? And he followed me around the rest of the day. As a matter of fact, when I walked him to the bus, he was supposed to go sit down on the bench. And I didn't make him because he was standing right beside me. One of the teachers said, Timmy, aren't you supposed to go sit down? The other teacher said, oh, he's Mr. Danny's shadow now. That simple sometimes can work. And especially if you see this attitude of rebellion, we can stop it. And we don't have to stop it with force and beating and mean. But we have to stop it with consistency. The same way we stop ourselves to say no. We sometimes have to just look at ourselves and say, no, you're not going to do that. You have to stop this. Again, I would ask you, if you have trouble, reach out to someone else. If you're raising grandkids, great-grandkids, I mean, these are things that people are dealing with. Reach out. Don't feel helpless and hopeless. There are answers. There are ways. And it's challenging. It's even more challenging in this world that we live in. But there is a way to do it. Even little Timmy can learn to mind in a half a day's time. Now, did it change his life? Probably not. He's probably right back the next day. But you know what? I have a feeling that if I went back and had a battle with Timmy, I would win. You know why? Because I know I win. I'm in charge. I have to. God knows how to raise kids. God knows how to correct us. He knows how to teach us. If we will continue to try and follow. And again, work together. Reach out to someone who's doing it correctly. Reach out to someone who's done it wrong and learn from it. The Bible's full of stories. We learn stories from people who did it wrong and they learned a lesson. And we learn stories and learn lessons from people who did it right. You know, we're all walking Bibles. We're all have our own lives and stories and things and difficulties that we've dealt with. Don't let pride be that thing that gets in our way, that we work together and we understand we all have made mistakes. We all do make mistakes. We all need each other. We all need to reach out to each other. Sometimes we find ourselves in bad places. So move Timmy's marker if you need to. Move it again if you need to. And move your own marker sometimes if you need to.